Well, hi, and welcome to Sped Homeschool Conversations. Thank you for joining us both on our live broadcast and our recorded sessions. Our live broadcast is on Facebook, and for our recorded sessions, we're on Facebook, we're on YouTube, and we're also on our podcast on Podomatic. Tonight, our special guest is Dr. Jan Bedell, the president of Little Giant Steps, and she's also the board chair for Sped Homeschool. So welcome, Jan.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
It's a delight to have you back. You were our very first guest when we started this broadcast, and I was very green, so I'm glad to have you back so we can do this a little better this time.
Well, so, you are definitely doing a good job with these, I can tell you.
Oh, thank you. It's been fun now that I've gotten into the groove. So I just want to thank you tonight because we're going to be starting the first of a two-part series, and we're going to be talking about the neurodevelopmental approach to typical diagnoses. And so I thought maybe to get us started that you could help explain what is the neurodevelopmental approach, and especially for those people in our audience who are not even familiar with it, to just give us a general idea of its basis and what's behind the approach itself and all that you have studied in that field.
Well, that's a big topic. But I'd be glad to give you a little overview.
Yes, that would be perfect.
So what our approach is different. The thing that I found that was so interesting is that I had taken my daughter with special needs to different modalities, and they looked at a very narrow view of her. You know, like a speech therapist, they only looked at one area. But what I love about the neurodevelopmental approach is that it looks at six different areas, mm-hmm. so three sensory-ish areas of the brain, and then three motor areas where information is coming into the brain through your, mainly through your tactile and your auditory and visual. Mm-hmm. And then what the brain does with that information is affects your mobility, your language, your handedness, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. So it looks at the whole child instead of just one piece. And what I found is that different aspects, so just for instance, with my daughter, she had low auditory processing, and that was affecting her reading ability. She knew all the phonograms and that kind of thing, mm-hmm. but she couldn't pull those pieces together. So that made a lot of sense to me to mm-hmm. see that correlation. So that's what we do, is look at the whole child. We look at nine different levels of the brain development mm-hmm. from birth on, and find out where the little glitches are, help mm. teach the parents what to do to fix those. And then oftentimes the symptoms, well, they always diminish, but sometimes they even totally go away. So
That's awesome. It's got to be just rewarding to be on that side and helping parents to be able to figure out those things that seem so mysterious.
Yes, it really is, because, you know, and a lot of times people think that they're the only ones out there that have mm-hmm. the issue that they're having. And sometimes when they see, oh, other people have this and have mm-hmm. Made progress, it makes a lot of difference to them, gives them a lot of hope.
Definitely. And hope is what we all need when we're struggling, just to know that there are answers out there and we can find something different than the struggle we're going through.
Yes.
So that's awesome.
I was just going to say sometimes the people have the children that have these issues, and even the adults, sometimes they feel kind of bad about themselves, mm-hmm. thinking they're not smart or something like that, when it's just their brain not working efficiently. So it's great to give that kind of good news as well.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. It's so easy to get beaten down by the things that our society says that you're supposed to be good at in order to be good. Education tends to be one of those areas. And for those kids that struggle, it can be a difficult climb back out of that. So yes, yeah. Definitely. Well, tonight we're going to talk about dyslexia and dysgraphia from the neurodevelopmental approach and kind of
I don't think I'm frozen, but it looks like you are. I'm not hearing anything. Peggy, are you still there?
I am. Okay. Now you can see me, right? Okay. Sorry. My internet must be flaky tonight, so I will just ask you to bear with me on that, and hopefully, as we prayed over this before we started, may God just keep this going. But yes, I just want to let our viewers know that as we're going along, if you have any questions that you want to ask Jan, or if there's something that we're talking about that brings up a question, definitely put those in the feed, and we'll make sure that we get those answered as we go along in this next 50 minutes that we have together. So to start us off, we hear a lot about learning challenges and learning struggles with kids, and it just seems to be so rampant. And also, we have so many different labels that a lot of times we don't even know what those labels mean. We just kind of say, well, my child has dyslexia because they have reading problems. But what exactly does that diagnosis mean when we say a child has dyslexia or an adult has dyslexia?
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because it just seems like a moving target, this of dyslexia. It has changed over the years. I just wanted to read a little bit of the history.
Yeah, definitely.
So at first it was called word blindness, and it was found by an ophthalmologist. So in 1887, there was a German ophthalmologist, a long time ago. His name was Rudolf Berlin, and he was the first to use the word dyslexia in place of word blindness. So he changed it from word blindness to dyslexia. Okay. And the condition was described as dyslexia, and that was from the Greek word meaning difficulty with words. Huh. So I hadn't known that before.
Oh.
But, you know, I've had a hard time when I go on to talk about this. I try to look up the definitions, and it seems like it's different all the time. But one of the most current ones I found was that they say now it's inefficient phonological processing, resulting in difficulty with single word decoding, that in turn cause difficulty in reading, writing, and spelling. So most professionals agree that that there's no known way to correct the underlying brain malfunctions that cause this dyslexia.
And it seems like such a wide spectrum instead of just a very pinpointed diagnoses.
Yes, and the professionals don't seem to be able to agree on what it really is. So it's gone from word blindness to phonological processing. So it's kind of interesting how, and it's so widespread. I mean, they say dyslexia is one of the leading learning disabilities that there are, but it doesn't seem like they can really agree on what it is.
So do you have a particular definition you use, or do you kind of just stay away from those labels?
Well, we do try to avoid the labels, that's for sure, because really, when you look at this and you look at the websites and stuff, they just have a list of symptoms. And from our view, each one of those symptoms is caused by something in the brain that is just not working right. You know, we call it a glitch, or the pathways aren't developed well, or something like that. But when I was doing my master's paper, I decided to do it on dyslexia. And I thought it was Samuel Orton. You know, you've heard of the Orton-Gillingham.
Yeah, Orton-Gillingham, yep.
Mm-hmm. There's so many things that have just congealed around that particular person. And Samuel Orton is the one that's really kind of started it. And I guess he was mm-hmm. joined by Gillingham to create this method. But when I studied about Samuel Orton, he said, well, these people have many things in common that are outside of reading. And not all of them have all of these symptoms, but a lot of them have balance issues. Mm-hmm. They have coordination issues. They have eye issues. You know, sometimes their eyes don't converge. They don't work together, or they mm-hmm. can't track.
Right.
Or... and he also said dominance was an issue too, where the person is storing information. So okay. dominance was one. And then he also said phonological awareness. You know, he agreed okay. with that one. But so over the years, the method has just boiled down to phonics.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 2-year, very specific, very intense phonics.
Mm-hmm.
So I found that very interesting that he said all these things are in common, but let's just pay attention to phonics.
Hmm.
So that didn't really make sense to me.
Right, because they're not looking at the whole child, where your perspective from your approach is, where's the whole child?
Right, exactly. And I'm hoping that we can... there's a handout that I have that has a whole list of symptoms, and I'm hoping that we can put this up for the viewers, find a way to link that. I talked to you.
We can link it into the, what I'll do is I'll link it into the bottom of this feed, and then mm-hmm. we'll also put it as a document within the SPED homeschool support group. So if you're a member of that group, you'll be able to access it through that group.
Oh, great.
That's the only place I can upload that. Yeah.
So what I've done is take the things that they talk about on, you know, other checklists mm-hmm. and put them on here, because they, you know, they have a specific test, but they also have all these just symptoms that is like mm-hmm. a parent screening.
Right.
And so each one of those symptoms, I've put out beside it a possible root cause. So as a neurodevelopmentalist, that's what we're looking for.
Right.
For instance, if they had eye issues, you know, if their eyes weren't working together, of course that's going to cause visual problem. You know,
exactly.
visual
problem
with mm-hmm. reading. And we found a lot of the kiddos have poor central vision. That's how they see right in the center. They mm-hmm. see more peripherally instead.
Oh.
And so, you know, they're reading along and they just skip over the of and the a and the mm-hmm. b, because these little words that you know they know, and you're going, what happened to that word, you know? Like, that one's really not hard. Go back.
Right. Yeah, and it can kind of change the meaning of what you're reading if you miss them.
Exactly. And so they're missing out on the comprehension because they didn't mm-hmm. read it correctly. But
right.
maybe they didn't read it correctly because their vision wasn't working right.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that's not a... learning disability, that's a vision issue that needs to be taken care of. So that's just one of the examples of this that is very interesting to me, that you know, they say, well, there's nothing you can do about it. You're just born with it. You're going to always have it. I mean, it's like, here, carry this sack of bricks all your life, and we're not going to help you get those out of your backpack.
Right. Definitely.
So definitely have a different approach to that.
Right. Yeah. Oftentimes I have parents ask me, well, what curriculum is the best? And So, you know, there's really no best approach. It's kind of what I've learned over the years, because my middle child struggles with a lot of these issues. And there was nothing that really worked well for him except what he learned for workarounds for himself to really help him to function with reading. And he does read. But yeah, I think if I would have drilled in the phonics, I probably would have killed the child.
That brings up a good point, because, you know, a lot of these are based, the dyslexia therapy that they have is based on phonics.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about phonics is it's a very auditory approach. And, you know, I was saying that my daughter knew all the sounds of all the phonograms and everything.
Right.
But she couldn't hold each of those pieces together to get the word out. And oftentimes you have to hold each of those pieces, and then sometimes they say this and sometimes they say that.
And then you got to make those mental distinctions at the same time, and you probably lose the information while you're thinking about what it says.
Yeah. So the whole key to that, and I think the key to why some people have some success with the typical dyslexia program, but others don't have much success. And that's because their processing, their auditory processing is really low.
Right.
And I don't think, I don't think I gave you that link, but on Little Giant Steps, there's a free test kit for auditory processing.
Uh-huh.
So you could go on and order that test kit. It tells you how to utilize that. And you can actually tell where your child is in their auditory processing. So if they're a really strong five, ready to work on six, and you'll understand what that is once you get the kit, then you can have much more success with the phonics. But if they're low in that, then phonics is going to be a real struggle. So reading is more than just being able to hold sounds together, which is the phonics approach. And it's very challenging for, especially for homeschoolers, because you have, now that's a page that will tell about it, but the home
yep.
page.
Yeah, well, if you go on the home page and then you click on the link, right, to, it goes to, it's right here, free auditory processing kit. And that'll take you right. So go to Little Giant Steps and that'll take you right there. Whoops, I'm going to go back.
Yeah.
I think it's playing your video.
Oh. Yes, there is there's a video there that talks about auditory processing and the importance of that. I really don't think that there's one single piece that is more important in all learning struggles as auditory processing. So I try to get the word out about that a lot, because it affects following directions, staying on task, all of those different things that we need to have for being able to read and to do school. The comprehension is a big piece that has to do with auditory processing too. So to me, the reading and writing, if you can't hold your thoughts together, you can't get them down on paper very well.
And no matter how much curriculum you're going to use, that isn't going to improve until you get to the root cause of that.
Yes. And so as far as curriculum, it really depends on the age of the child, you know, and what's going on. First, I would encourage everyone to do just a little simple test where they test the tracking. And, you know, you can do that at home. Just have something that's on a little, you know, pencil topper or something like that, a sticker on a popsicle stick, something you, and you hold it out about 18 inches from the bridge of their nose and then into the, you know, and watch those eyes come in, watch them come out, and then do a little horizontal and vertical tracking, and then come back in again. do that a few times to really tire out the eyes and watch and see if you see those eyes coming together and then back out. Because if you don't have the eyes working together, then this message is going to be like this instead of like this. The eyes putting the image directly on top of the other, it's going to be skewed. And so that can cause things to float on the page. It can cause them to, you know, not be able to get to the end of the sentence and come back to where they're supposed to be on the next line. I mean, it can cause a lot of challenges. And and if you see when they're tracking that their eyes just go, you know, they flutter or they don't stay right with it, you can see how if they're reading along and then they their eyes go back, that can be very confusing about how do I get this out because it said this, but now it says that.
Right. That's what my son did. I did that tracking with him a long time ago, and I saw that and I was like, wow, I did not realize he was doing that. I mean, when you're reading with your child, you don't watch their eyes. You look at the page with them.
So, yes, exactly. Yeah, so that's one of the things that they can look for as far as root causes. And then, I know that Orton talked about dominance, and I don't know if your audience really understands what we mean when we talk about that, but.
Why don't you define it for us just in case they don't, because it's always good.
So with our, you start with the hand for the hand dominance, and that's the one that you go with because that's genetic. All right. So if they're still mixed handed, going back and forth, that's really a lot of disorganization, central nervous system. So we've got some articles and things that you can read about to help with that. And then some podcasts too, the braincoachtips.com.
Yep, I can put that up here. I've got, let's see. There it is. I'm going to put that up here. There we go. So if there's Jan's page, it's braincoachtips.com. And you've got a lot of different podcasts to choose from on there.
Yeah. There's about, it looks like we're up to 55 there. We're probably a little bit behind. I think I've got 60, so we're close there. But if they want to know about the neurodevelopmental approach, this is a good place to go. And then looking at the individual symptoms, because a lot of kids, you know, they don't just have dyslexia. They have dyslexia and ADD and OCD, or, you know, sometimes they come in with a myriad of labels. And if they want to know about what I think about labels, then there's a podcast there called To Label or Not to Label. And that can give you some really good information, because sometimes people think if I just had them tested and find out exactly what this is, then I can really address this situation. But I don't know about you, Peggy. I know you've got children that maybe already have labels. I don't know.
My oldest was diagnosed with Asperger's. He chose not to be re-diagnosed when he went to college. He wanted to do that on his own. I'm going to share the YouTube link. It's the hard one, so if you want to copy that down or check it out some other time. But you can check out the Little Giant Steps YouTube channel too. If you do a search for Little Giant Steps, you can look to label or not to label, I think, right?
It's Brain Coach Tips.
Yep, it's Brain Coach Tips is the name or the channel of YouTube channel. And it says To Label or Not to Label is the name of the particular one. So yes, he chose not to to go with that. He said, I want to do it on my own. And we had really taken care of a lot of his sensory issues by the time he was early junior high age. And so, wasn't really struggling as much as, mm-hmm. as he was when he was first diagnosed. And, so he's learned to adapt around those things. And my second child just said he never wanted to go to college anyways, and really knows that he struggles. I mean, he has some medical issues too that he struggles with that cause some pain in his life. But he's decided also that he just wants to work around those. I guess we're just a hard-headed group of people.
I think that sometimes we are misled to think that if we have a label, then we're going to have answers. Mm-hmm. But so many times I have people come like to conventions, and they come to the booth and they say, you know, I've got this label and now what do I do? You know, they were expecting really a lot of help, but sometimes it helps the child to know, oh, there is, you know, to put it off on something else. Mm-hmm. I choose to say, let's put it off on a tricky brain and mm-hmm. say, well, your brain is tricky right now, but we're going to do something about that so all that smart stuff can come out.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I like to do, because oftentimes sometimes it's limiting. The labels mm-hmm. are limiting. And yeah. sometimes they use them as an excuse. And oftentimes it's not what the mom is really looking for, because she's not looking for a label. She's right. looking for help.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. so that's the whole bottom line, is you want to have the help that you need to help your child pass these things.
Right. That's exactly it. That we want answers that can help improve what we're seeing, not just, yeah, something that can help further define this label that we have for our child.
So I was telling you a little bit about dominance and how mm-hmm. that affects. Our view is that you start with the hand, because that's genetic, and then it's the most efficient if the eye and the ear are lined up on the same side. So you have two eyes that you see with, obviously,
right.
but one is choosing the information to go into storage. So this is where it's so frustrating when people go, oh my goodness, I know they knew it yesterday. And now, they can't even find it for me.
Right.
So here's some help to understand why that happens. So let's say the child is right-handed, but left eye dominant. So they take in that information, and because this side of the body is controlled by this hemisphere of the brain, it is stored over here. And then if they're right-handed, they're going to go here to this side.
Look for it.
It's kind of like putting things in a file cabinet, and you've got this picture of a giraffe, and you put it in the folder, you put it in the second drawer, but you go to look for it, and it's not under G for giraffe.
Right.
And then you go, oh, okay, well, maybe it's under M for mammal, because, you know, a giraffe is a mammal, and that's probably place, and so you go there and look for it. Well, it's not there either. So there's kind of two personalities that I see. One is going to just work and work and work, and they're going to go through that whole file cabinet no matter how long it takes, and they're going to find
it. Right, exactly.
And you're going to say, okay, mom, I'm out of here. This is too hard. I check out.
Right. Uh-huh. Definitely.
So, but there's a reason why that's happening, and you can make it change. You can make that dominance change so that the information is going to the right place. Now, you definitely want to do that tracking, make sure that the convergence is working. Because the solution for that is for short periods of time, you just occlude that eye. So you make the brain go, oh, this is not working right. I have to use this one.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're reading and working on academics, then if you force the information to the right place, then it can make all the difference.
Right.
The same thing with the ear. You know, you want to sit on the side of your child that's the same side as their hand. So you're talking into their dominant ear. And if they're looking at your paper this direction, they're looking with what should be the dominant eye. Make sense?
Yes, definitely.
And we have seen a huge, huge difference with kids once they have switched their dominance, and a very high percentage are mixed. Eye if they come in with those kind of issues.
Wow. Yeah. We don't even think about that, and we don't talk about that because we just, you know, keep trying to drill it in and say, well, eventually they should just get it. And, you know, we just expect that file folder will move on its own. And it's not going to.
Well, and that's why curriculum is not going to solve the root issues.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is certain curriculum based on the age. I have found something called the three R's that goes up very, very slowly in the introduction of words. And at first, if we find that the child has low processing, we actually teach them with a flash method, like teaching them some sight words.
Mm-hmm.
And because I don't know if you have thought about this, and I didn't think to put this in what we could show them, but this has gone around to a lot of through the email, where there's a university study where they switched up all the letters of the word except the first and last one. Mm-hmm. Do you remember seeing that?
Yep, yep,
and
I do.
You can still read it.
Yeah, oh, I can read it perfectly.
So what does that tell us about our reading ability? Are we sounding out those words? No. Even when they're mixed up, we can still tell what they are. So I know it's real controversial. It's very scary for homeschoolers, especially because, you know, it's just drilled into us as homeschoolers that phonics is the way to teach reading.
Mm-hmm.
And don't get me wrong. I love phonics. It's fabulous. It's a fabulous way to teach reading if the processing is good enough. But if it's not, then it's going to be a real struggle. And then you're going to find yourself spending all this money on one phonics program after the other because you know it has to be phonics. And you think it's the phonics program that's not working, but it's really the processing. It's the root skill that has to be there before the phonics can work.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So what can a parent do if they know that processing is an issue? I know you have the test, you have links to things that parents can go to for resources from that test.
Yes, because there's a simple little activity that you can do twice a day for 2 minutes to get that processing up, and then phonics will work. It's so exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Yes. So there is that missing link, and once that missing link gets repaired, then life should be easier.
In many, many ways, many ways. So in the meantime, we build that sight word vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
And then we build the processing, add the phonics back in, then they have just the best of both worlds.
Yes.
So that's what's really, really exciting about this work. And not only, it's so rewarding to be able to give parents tools to do. So the three R's is the program that's for the younger kids because it goes up real slow. It just adds a word or two here in each book and keeps reusing the same words.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one thing for the little guys that are struggling. And then one thing that can really build comprehension is called New Practice Readers. And There are only about 4 to 5 paragraphs.
Oh, that's
and nice. If they do some echo reading where the parent reads it first mm-hmm. and then they read it.
Yeah, right.
Read the same thing, not that next paragraph, but the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. Then that's going to make all the difference in their confidence level, their ability to flow with fluency and that kind of thing. And it just builds their confidence so fast. Right. And a lot of people are kind of scared of that because they think, oh, they're just memorizing it. But again, we're building the site.
Right. Well, and eventually, don't we all just do sight words? And when we only use phonics when we have to?
That's exactly right. That's my point in that I brought up about that university study. Because we are sight words. It would be way too slow for us to read by phonics. As soon as we know the word, we just say it.
Right. And,
or we just speak it if we're reading silently, and then we just keep going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then exactly when you don't know a word or you're not familiar with it, then you use your phonics. And so the two skills are very important. And you don't want to just do one or the other, but you want to know why you're not doing one or the other.
Right. Well, once you understand the why, the frustration level goes down incredibly low. I mean, with anything, it's like if you're struggling with a medical diagnosis or, you know, some kind of pain, you don't know where it's coming from. Once you know the why behind it, it makes it easier to bear. And because you know that there's a possibility of some answer. Coming out of that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and one thing I wanted to say, when we do have a page that's just specifically for dyslexia.
Oh, yes. I was going to put that.
I think you have a link to that. It's through the.
I do. Yep. All right. So let's see if I can bring that one there. And it's just, it's littlegiantsteps.com/dyslexia is the page name.
And then the lady that you see up in the upper right, she has a son that was labeled dyslexic. She said he was so smart. She sent him to school, and he just came home after a few weeks in first grade and said, "I'm just not a very smart little boy."
Oh.
And he was just horrified because she knew he was brilliant, you know.
Exactly.
With him all those years, and the school wouldn't give him any help because he wasn't failing, and so it was very interesting. You've got some action going on at your house.
I know. I live on a main road. I'm moving in 2 weeks, and so I'm hoping that takes care of that issue.
Oh.
At least my phone isn't ringing. It was ringing last week, so.
Well, this little boy, he had gone through 2 years of the dyslexia program and had gotten to pretty much grade level at 10 years old. And she said he's just having to work too hard and struggle too much. And this all made sense to her. So she did the neurodevelopmental approach with him for another 16 months. And at 11 and a half, with a diagnosis of dyslexia, he was at the 10th grade level. And that's because he had like 130 IQ. And so that was really releasing his potential instead of just keeping him, you know, like at grade level. Because there were other issues that were causing those struggles.
And we saw the same thing happen with my oldest, too. He was not reading hardly at all and went to a college level the next year. Just because we took the time to work on the stuff that he just needed to get through, and it was amazing. And his mostly was developmental that he just had to work through. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, they say spelling is another. So reading, writing, and spelling is what they say is inclusive of this challenge with dyslexia. And I just want to share a little bit about our view of spelling.
Yeah,
and that definitely. Is, when you write something down, have you ever noticed that you go, oh, that doesn't look right.
Yes.
And so why are you able to say that? You say that because it doesn't match a picture that you have in your head.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Of what that word should look like. But for those that don't see in pictures, and they think in words, because we store things either in a picture or conceptually in words.
Mm.
And if you don't see in pictures, you just write it however. And if you're taught by phonics, you write it phonetically.
Uh-huh.
But there's a lot of different ways you can say A.
Mm-hmm.
You can write A. So right. I had this experience with my daughter without disabilities. I taught her with the writing road to reading. She knew all the phonograms, you know, we'd mark all those. And she could spell anything phonetically and nothing correctly. It was bizarre. I'm telling you, it was bizarre. I could read exactly what she wrote, but it was not spelled right.
Oh.
Because yeah, that she did not see in pictures. So they can learn to see in pictures. And it's a good skill because a lot of times women are visualizers. They see in pictures, and men are oftentimes conceptualizers. And so you can see the challenge when they're talking to each other.
Right.
And she's trying to paint this picture for him that he doesn't see in. And, there goes the communication.
Right.
So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Well, I definitely want to make sure we also get to talk about dysgraphia, too.
That
was the other thing we wanted to address. And also for our viewers that are watching, if you have questions that you would like answered, definitely put those in the feed so that we can get those answered also during our discussion. So, and thank you for joining us this evening. So, again, looking at dysgraphia, what does that label mean? Or how is it another spectrum type of thing that we were looking at as we looked at dyslexia? Or is it a little more honed down in its definition?
Well, it depends on where you look. Again, it's very much defined differently. But I did find one that's pretty common, I would think. So it affects a person's handwriting ability and fine motor skills. The bottom line. It says a person with a specific learning disability, with this one of dysgraphia, may have problems including illegible handwriting, inconsistent spacing, poor spatial planning on paper, poor spelling, and difficulty composing writing as well as thinking and writing at the same time. So, in our perspective, that is going to be a list of symptoms that are caused by some glitch in the brain.
Right.
So, let's take inconsistent spacing, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
So, if your central detail vision is not working right.
Right.
And you write something down and you're printing and you have to pick up your pencil and put it back down. See correctly.
Mm-hmm.
It may be on top of where you were. It may be way too far from where you were.
Mm-hmm.
That's why cursive.
I was just going to say, is that why cursive works better? Because I've heard that too.
Yeah.
Picking up.
Because of proprioception, they can kind of tell where they are, and because they haven't picked up their pencil, but visually, it's been a real challenge. So me. That doesn't really have anything to do with ability to write. It's like how they're perceiving to write.
Mm-hmm.
And then just the fact that, I'll give you an example. I had one little guy that described it as his hands feel fluffy.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, he was brilliant because what he was describing is the pathway from his brain wasn't making it down to these fingers to tell them what to do. And so he was trying to make those symbols like mom wanted him to. But it just wasn't translating because the pathway was immature. So that is something that you can build the pathway by stimulating the brain. In anything that you're trying to change, you just have to stimulate the brain. So with that, it's like what's called deep pressure. So you just press, and then you press, and then you move up and press some more, and then you press some more, and press on each finger and each joint. And every time you press, you're sending a signal to the brain. This is my finger. This is my hand. This is my arm. And the more we work those pathways, the more it's called dendrite branching. It's like the appendages from a cell look kind of like fingers. And then they go together with an axon to make a pathway. So that is something that can easily be fixed, is that pathway is not working. So that translates into doing fine motor things like buttoning and tying and zipping. All of those things take this cortical opposition and fine motor. You have to have that connection so that the person can feel their fingers and move them. You know, their brain can make them move. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And is that something that you would do before handwriting all the time, or is that something that your brain just starts to make that connection of, this is, you know, where we are at, and this is where those fingers are at, and that so slowly you kind of work yourself out of those types of exercises and things?
Yes. You don't have to do them forever. It's a really good idea to do them for a good 3 to 4 months. And about a minute on each of the limbs, especially if they're kind of like a bull in the china shop kind of person.
Exactly.
People and poor social space, those kind of things. It can really be helpful if you do it on their legs, too. So
yes,
that just helps them. But a lot of this, the root cause is they didn't develop this when they were babies. Not being on their stomach enough or not crawling enough. Because if you think about it, when you're crawling, you put your hand down, you're pushing off with those fingers and you're building those muscles.
Right.
A lot of times we used to carry heavy pails and climb trees and, do all kinds of things. And now we're doing this. So it's made a lot of difference culturally, what we're doing that are causing this rampant rise in our labeling of children. I don't think it's just that we can know how to test for it better. I think it's just really on the rise.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can think of another example here. Okay, so difficulty composing writing. This to me goes back to the root cause of the auditory processing.
Okay.
Because if you can't hold those pieces in your head, you can't compose it and hold it long enough to get it down on paper.
Yeah. So for those of you that may have just joined us, Jan has a whole list of questions that we're going to post up at the end of this feed, and also as an upload to our support group, so that you can go through and see some of these typical, I guess, diagnoses descriptions that may be rooted somewhere completely different based on, you know, what they look at in the neurodevelopmental approach, that you can get to the bottom of instead of just trying another curriculum, which we're kind of realizing that that's not maybe the best approach, so it may be driving you crazy for a reason.
And you can also learn to adapt any curriculum. Mm-hmm. But the main thing that I like to stress is let's get rid of as many of these symptoms as possible by just stimulating the brain so that it works better.
Exactly.
That little guy that I was telling you about that was really smart and had come up to the 10th grade, he said, he left my office. He says, I'm telling my dad I'm cured of dyslexia. And it was really true because he didn't have the symptoms anymore. And right. So I think if they had had him retested, that he would not have qualified for that label again. Mm-hmm. So that's what's exciting is these things that we've been told all this time can be turned around. And I know some of your audience is just going, I just can't hardly believe that because every professional that they know has told them that this is a lifelong thing. They've heard about Fonzie and or the Fonz and how he's dyslexic and he'll always be dyslexic. And that's because nothing different was done.
Right.
They labeled him dyslexic. Nothing different was done. And he always has those symptoms. Mm-hmm. But the total opposite can happen if you do something about those symptoms.
Right. So I want to make sure that our viewers know that they can check out all your resources at littlegiantsteps.com. And also the Brain Coach Tips, which is your YouTube channel. And and so all of your podcasts are being switched over to YouTubes with slides. Is that correct?
Yes.
That's what we're in the process
of doing now.
Mm-hmm. So, and you have so much good information on there. And then you also have a store too, so parents can find resources in addition to that. And then also you have screenings. I wanted to make sure to mention that also, that you had given me the link to that. I'll see if I can find it.
Well, a screening is just a little snapshot of how they're doing neurodevelopmentally. And it can give some really good resources as far as, or indications, instead of a label, what's causing this?
Right.
That's what the screening is for. And so if you're in the Dallas area, then we can arrange a screening with a group, or we have private screenings as well. And then we also have people in the Austin area and Houston that do screenings. So that's could be an option for you. And we do have really good people on the phone that can talk with parents and we even have a survey on our homepage that if you wanted to fill out the survey, it gives us an idea of what's going on with your situation, and then we can recommend some things that might be helpful from that.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Well, good. Well, is there anything else that you want to add? Our time is wrapping up, and I know we're going to be back next week to talk some more on the neurodevelopmental approach. We're going to talk about ADHD, ADD, and sensory issues, which I guess are the other big, the big ones that parents always bring and say, how do you homeschool with this? And those are things we don't have curriculum for, which kind of maybe is a gift in disguise because we just have to be creative.
That's true. That's true. Yes, I'm looking forward to sharing with you next week more about, again, those are symptomatic labels. Mm-hmm. Something causing each one of those symptoms. And if we can give the brain enough stimulation, then we can diminish that and make life a whole lot easier and more bearable for everybody. Mm-hmm. And even enjoyable.
Yes.
As a matter of fact.
We want to have our homes enjoyable instead of chaotic and crazy.
Exactly. We want to get there. And we want our kids not to be so discouraged.
Yes,
because
exactly.
Because they work hard and they just just don't understand why they can't get it where somebody else can get it.
Right.
And that's where I just want to reiterate that you might want to use that tricky brain analogy. And say, you know, your brain is just tricking you right now, but we're going to do some activities and stimulate your brain. We're going to do some brain training that can make those pathways work right, and all that smart stuff can come out then.
Exactly. Yes.
So that because really makes
sense. That each of our children are gifted, even if they're dealing with profound issues. There is a reason that God put them in this world, and yeah. we have to find that, and we have to make that blossom and grow. So that's really okay. what our role as a parent is to do, is to make mm-hmm. them, help them, come alongside them and help them find that. Mm-hmm. So thank you for just all that you do, Jan, to help parents to do that. Cause that's so exciting that you have been able to have this ministry. Really, it is a ministry to be able to help parents and children to get to the bottom.
It's so rewarding. I know that it has eternal consequences, because mm-hmm. the better we can function, the better we can serve the Lord. And exactly. I've just had some people say things like, I had this one mom come to me and say, she's just in tears. My son is a street evangelist now at 19. And mm-hmm. she said, there's no way he would have been able to do that with what he was dealing with before he did mm-hmm. neurodevelopment. So, wow, is that so rewarding. So thanks yes. so much for having me so I can share and get this word out a little bit further.
Definitely. So make sure next week, I always give a summary of what we're doing next week on our show, but we'll be doing the second part of this series. Again, like I said, talking to Dr. Jan Bedell on the neurodevelopmental approach to ADD, ADHD, and sensory issues. And so that's very exciting. We thank the Learning Disabilities Foundation of America for partially funding this broadcast, and for viewers like you to fund the rest. If you go to our website, you can donate to keep our ministry going for SPED Homeschool at spedhomeschool.com. And if you donate through GuideStar, they don't charge us a fee for that. So that is awesome. All the funds go directly to SPED Homeschool. And so in addition to next week, tomorrow, I'm going to be interviewed on the HSLDA website, or I think they're going to post it on their Facebook page too. But I'm going to be talking about how to creatively change up your curriculum. So I get to do two broadcasts in 2 days. So, let's just keep the conversation going, both on our Facebook page. You can comment on our website, or you can join in the conversation on the support group that we have on Facebook. So if you head to our Facebook page, you can find our Facebook support group and join in the conversation there. So we'll see you next week. Otherwise, we'll see you on all those other channels. Thanks, and have a good night.